Now, families who turn down two offers of social housing will not get another one for 5 years under the new government plans. At the moment, anyone who rejects two offers, they're suspended from the waiting list for a year. And I'm now joined by Francis Doherty. He's from Peter McVerry Trust to tell us more about it. Good morning, Francis, and thank you very much for joining us.
Good morning.
First of all, Francis, for any family having been on the waiting list for so long, and many for as long as 9 to 10 years, what kind of reasons are being given to refuse an offer of housing?
There are, I suppose, there's a wide spread of reasons as to why people are refusing sort of an offer of social housing. And I think what we hear about in the media is sort of the more extreme cases. So I think that, you know, when this issue has been covered, people have pointed to people saying that they weren't happy with the colour of the paint in the property. They weren't happy with the size of the back garden. But really what the main reasons are is that whether it's suitable for the family. So is it the right size for the family? Is it in a location where there isn't sort of existing antisocial behaviour? So if you can imagine that people that might be offered a house, they might be offered a house in a location where there's sort of ongoing and long-term sort of antisocial issues within the area, and a family might decide that they don't want to move into that area and they would rather refuse that allocation and hope for something else to come up in a different area. So, the reasons are mostly, you know, what everybody would judge as sort of legitimate, in that, you know, if it's not right for your family, if it's not in an area that's appropriate for your family, then you're going to, you know, take a decision and say what's best for my family is not to take that unit, and I'll see what else comes up in the next offer. But you know, the rate of refusals is relatively low. So like, we work with about, you know, 1,000 people in Dublin at the moment, and if we were to offer them a property, or we were to get our hands on a property, they would, you know, they would take our arm off to get it. People are really, you know, in the main, really just concentrated on getting a home, getting into that home, and settling down and getting on with their lives. So, in some respects, it's a bit, you know, it's a bit sort of changing the narrative to almost make it seem like part of the social housing crisis is down to people being fussy over what type of houses they get.
Well, I can certainly understand and relate to any refusal on the grounds that the area is having problems with drugs or antisocial behaviour. But what's your opinion on the other reasons given for refusal? I mean, having been in rented, you know, housing, which is an uncertain situation, or even emergency accommodation, and for so many years as well, surely a family should be grateful for an offer of social housing, which is more of a permanent ground for them, isn't it?
Yeah, like, it is. Like, you would... It is, without knowing the sort of the case-by-case reasons, it's difficult to understand why people wouldn't take up the security of a social housing offer. And, you know, it can be sort of maybe not understanding what they're entitled to. So if you, for example, if you take up a social housing unit and after a period of months you think, maybe this isn't going to work out for me in the long term, you can be placed on a transfer list. So you might be waiting again a period of years, but you can be then transferred to another area, to another unit, when one becomes available. So it's not to say that you're going to be there forever. There are options, but it's about people sort of being aware of those options, being informed of what they're entitled to do under sort of the social housing sort of allocations. And it's also, you know, working with people to say, you know, do they have the support once they go into the house to work through any issues or sort of make the best of the situation? So is it the case that they're just getting the house, but they might have, you know, a support need? So what type of support can we make sure that it might mean that if we were to build a package of supports around the family moving into a house, they might be more likely to take it in the first instance, and it would reduce down the sort of rates of refusal.
Okay, and when is the new rule coming into effect?
Well, it's a proposal that was being spoken about at Cabinet, and there was a subcommittee in Cabinet that deals with housing and social housing and homelessness, and they were to discuss that either this week or next week, and depending on the outcomes of those discussions, then there would have to be a process then of going through the various stages and steps to put it into policy. But it wouldn't be something that you'd imagine, if it does go ahead, would happen this year. It would be something that would probably come in next year.
Okay. And what's your personal view on the new rules?
Personally, I think it's something that needs to be looked at. If there are people that aren't are refusing properties for non-legitimate reasons, then there has to be a course of action taken, because it can't be simply I'm going to keep refusing properties until I get the perfect brand new home in my first preference area. As people say, like, we all have to make choices. We know, unless we win the lotto, we're never going to have the perfect perfect house in the right area. So it's about, really, I think there's a lot of work to go into the details as to why people are refusing, engaging with people that are on the list and are getting a property and making it clear to them that this is, the best outcome for them and their family. They will have that security. They will get support if they need it. They don't have to be there for life necessarily. They can, if their circumstances change, be put on a transfer list. So it's about making clear to those families that, this is the best course of action for them. And if people are still refusing on sort of spurious grounds, then of course we have to take steps to try and address that. But I think there's probably a bit of work to do before we take such a draconian measure as increasing a suspension from 1 year to 5 years.
Okay. What's the reasoning behind the rule, though? If a family rejects an offer and then it gets offered to the next family on the list, so somebody ends up happy. So what difference, should it make? The list is still moving upwards, isn't it? The point I'm making here is why force accommodation on someone if it doesn't suit them? And the chances are it may very well suit the next family on the list, or maybe the next.
I think it's there's probably, you could assume there's two reasons to it. One is that there's obviously very significant pressure on the local authorities to reduce, and the government to reduce the number of people waiting on a social housing unit. So by bringing in this rule, you would be removing people maybe from the list for a period of 5 years, so the figures might come down quicker. The other thing is that because, there is such pressure and there is such a shortage of housing, they just want to make it clear that the people that are willing to take housing will, get access to it quicker, and the people that might be messing around rejecting multiple offers will be taken off the list. So it's only the people that may be deemed more genuine in their determination to take any house that's offered to them would be sort of fast-tracked into those units. So it's about maybe speeding up the allocations process and weeding out those people that that aren't going to take a property unless it's in the perfect location and the perfect condition.
Yes, I understand. And roughly how many are on the DCC housing list at the moment, Dublin City Council housing?
There's a sizable number. I'm not sure of the exact figure off the top of my head, but I think it's, it's a very sizable figure, and unfortunately, even despite the best efforts of Dublin City Council and the housing team, who have made, have sort of turned around things in the last 12 months and have plans for other sites and are really trying to make a go of providing social housing. Despite that, I think the waiting times and the number of people on the waiting list continues to sort of creep up, and I think particularly if you're a single person or you're a couple, the waiting list hasn't got any shorter, and the wait will be sort of 7, 8, if not 10 years for some people. Whereas if you are a family, chances are, given that most of the social stock is family units, you'll probably get housed quicker.
Right. Let's say a family at number 40 on the list at present. How good a position is this in reality? Like, how much longer before they get an offer of housing? Still another year or two, is it?
Yeah, it really depends on it. There's lots of factors. So if you're number 40, but what are your preference areas? Have you, are you allocated? Are you saying that your preference is in Dublin 1, Dublin 3, Dublin 5? Is it a preference on the south side? So if you're, it depends on the area that you're in. Some areas are seeing more social housing activity than others. So in those areas, you probably are going to be housed faster. But if you're in an area, for example, it came up at the last housing committee in Dublin City Council that if you're in and around the Docklands at the moment, either the north side or the south side of the docks, that there's very little by way of social housing being provided and what's going to happen there in the long term for people in those communities that are come from those communities that are waiting on a list to get social housing in those areas. If there's nothing being provided or very little being provided, then they could, you know, they could be waiting, you know, easily a decade to get housed. Whereas other, if they express an interest in moving to another part of the city, they might get housed in a couple of years.
Okay. And what about homeless applicants in emergency accommodation? Do they still have priority status on the waiting list?
Well, the there was a reconfiguration of the allocations policy in Dublin City Council last year, where they made some changes, but there is still a priority for homeless households. The main change was that it was sort of the allocations to homeless families was to be sort of downgraded a notch, but that there still remain a priority for allocations for Dublin City Council. So the way it works is that everybody that is in homeless services in the city that has an entitlement to local authority housing, they are on the social housing list for Dublin City Council or one of the other Dublin local authorities. So as soon as property comes up again in their area where they've expressed an interest in or have a connection with, then they're just like everybody else really on the list. There's other groups that are priority as well, but homelessness is just one of them at the moment.
Okay, and applicants who are homeless who refuse two offers, that will result in them being stripped of their priority status as well as a 5-year suspension period under these new rules. Would that be right?
I think it is. Yeah, it is. But again, we haven't ever had a case in the trust where somebody's refused two properties.
Right.
So it, you know, again, if, particularly because we work with single people in the main, that there's so few properties for single people in the city in the social housing stock that when something comes up, they will do anything to get into that property, take it and, you know, get on with their lives. So we, you know, there might be the odd case where somebody sees the property for the first time, doesn't feel that they want to go with it, and that they then have to wait, you know, a few months or 6 months before something else comes up. But we've never, not that I'm aware, ever had a case where somebody's rejected two offers of housing coming from Homeless Services and Peter McCrae Trust.
Right, okay. So these rates apply only to the offer of social homes and not the granting of housing assistance payment, like the HAP.
Yeah, and there was a legacy issue with HAP, really, that when it came out, people thought that if they took up HAP, they would lose their place on the social housing list. And that has taken a lot of time to take that back and say, actually, no, if you take HAP, you can go on to the transfer list and you remain in the social housing list for your local authority. But there was that fear initially, so that sort of hampered people's uptake of HAP. And then the other thing that's more prevalent now and has impacted on people's take-up of HAP is the fact that people are in HAP tenancies in the private rental sector and they're being evicted and they're ending up in homelessness. So, you know, just yesterday we were contacted by somebody who had three different rental properties in the last 3 years, was evicted from each of them. All of the notice to quit was that the landlord was selling the property and now finds herself again on the verge of homelessness. So, you know, taking up HAP is there's no additional security to any other private rental tenant. So if the landlord decides to sell in the morning, you're going to be evicted. And if the landlord needs to do work, you're going to be evicted. So people are reluctant because they've been burned so many times in the private rental sector and they're really trying to say, well, maybe I'm near the top of the list now, I'm going to hold on and just get that piece of security when it comes.
Yes, I understand. And the new rules, as you mentioned earlier, they're expected to be given sign-off by the Cabinet in coming weeks.
So it'll be interesting to see sort of, I suppose, the full detail of the proposal when it is, as expected, sort of approved by Cabinet. So, and how that is actually put into practice by the local authorities and the timelines for that, because, you know, any changes to procedures and protocols means that local authorities have to spend a lot of energy putting those processes into place. And, you know, again, they don't have a huge amount of resources on the housing side. So if they're taking the time to implement these new measures, it means they're not doing something else, which could be taken away from them working on housing projects.
Right, well. so just to shift the subject slightly, the CSO figures on housing completions for 2018, they show an increase of roughly 20%. How has this contributed to reducing the numbers in emergency accommodation? I'd say it has quite a lot.
Well, I suppose our view on it, John, is that the an increase in housing stock is positive because it hopefully lessens the pressure on the private rental market. So if there's more property being built, houses and apartments, it means that people that are trying to buy a home might have a better chance of doing it. And if they buy that home, they might leave their rental accommodation. That frees up another rental property. And then it means that there's more rental properties in the system. And hopefully that means that there's more people in homelessness that could secure one of those rental units. And, you know, the private rental sector has been the main housing source for single people in homelessness for years now. So we are very reliant. We are over-reliant on it. But that's why we see it as, you know, any increase in housing output is to be welcomed. We know we're coming from a very low base. We know we still have a long way to go to meet the targets and the needs that exist. But look, it's on an upward trend. That's to be welcomed. It's a positive. And hopefully, the more units that come on stream, the pressure is taken off the rental market in particular. People won't be pushed out of the rental market into homelessness, and more people in homelessness can get out of homelessness and get into a private rental unit with support and with things like the housing assistance payment. So it is, you know, good news, but again, we have a long way to go to get to the point where we're building enough to meet the need that exists out there.
Right. And of the new homes completed in 2018, do you know roughly how many were apartments as against houses, or how many one bedrooms, two beds or three beds? Or I think that's something that the CSO has to look into.
Yeah, so we've spoken to the CSO. So what they do is give a breakdown of one-off housing, which tends to be more rural areas across the country. Then they talk about houses that are part of sort of a housing estate or a housing scheme. And then they give a breakdown of how many apartments are also built each year. So I think there was about 900 apartments built last year, which is really only a fraction of what we need. It is up 7% on the year before, but we really need to see an increase in high quality, good size apartments being built for people to rent and to buy. But the piece that we spoke to the CSO about was the information on about what type of unit. Is it a one bed apartment, a two bed apartment, is it a two bed or a three bed house? And the reason that's important is because the housing agency do an assessment of social housing need every year, and they tell us how many single people, how many couples, how many, you know, families with one child, families with two children, etc., are on the list. So we know exactly each year what type of house we need. So we need, you know, we need 30,000 one beds, we need 20,000 two beds, etc. So is the market building that type of housing, or is the market building the wrong type of housing? So that's the big question. If we leave everything to private developers to build, then chances are they're going to build what's most profitable, and that's 3 and 4 bed family homes. But if you look at it from a social housing need perspective, then the greatest need is for 1 bedroom and 2 bedroom houses and apartments. So it's about identifying what we're building, making sure that's in line with what's needed. And if it's not in line with what's needed, we need to change what we're doing and match it with the need that exists.
Okay. Thanks again, Francis, for joining us today. And well done for all the work that all you people do at Peter McVerry Trust. And all the best to you. Take care. Have a great day.
Thanks very much for having me on.
You're most welcome. Now, that was Francis Doherty from Peter McVerry Trust talking about more strict government plans for families who turned down 2 offers of social housing. And also, we touched on the CSO figures for new housing completions in 2018.